Welcome to the Michigan Opportunity, an economic development podcast featuring candid conversations with business leaders across Michigan. You'll hear firsthand accounts from Michigan business leaders and innovators about how the state is driving job growth and business investment, supporting a thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem, building vibrant communities, and helping to attract and retain one of the most diverse and significant workforces in the nation.
Hello, I'm your host, Ed Clementi, and we're very fortunate to have Rod Hardiman. He's the CEO and chief strategist of Urge Imprint, and he's the CEO of Urge Development Group, and I think he'll take time to explain both of those to us. Welcome to the show, Rod.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on.
Yeah, everybody speaks very highly of you, so there's a lot of pressure on you to deliver today. I know that we have a lot of common friends, too, and but let's say you go to a party, people don't know what Urge is or what you do. What do you kind of tell people?
That's a great question. So, you know, when I boil down what Urge Imprint is and what Urge Development Group are, it really comes down to two very basic concepts. We focus on transformative change and systemic impact. And that is the guiding star in the guiding light about everything that we do. So Urge Imprint is a management consulting firm that focuses on the public sector, small and medium-sized enterprises, as well as the real estate sector. And Urge Development Group is a real estate development firm. We build, construct communities, neighborhoods, and buildings. And so when it comes down to it, I play Monopoly and Legos for a living to have the most impact in communities that I can possibly have.
And I noticed, even when I read over some of your stuff from the website, is can you explain the difference sort of between placekeeping and placemaking? I think you just did, right?
Yeah. So we consider ourselves, you know, creative place keepers, not placemakers. So placemakers historically has a conversation more about reinventing a community, injecting only new things. Right. What unfortunately oftentimes gets associated with very horrible words like gentrification. Right. But it's saying it makes oftentimes community feel as though what I have had no value. And so I got to take everything new from you. What creative place keeping does, it says, how do we honor the historical legacy when we come into a community? How do we understand the rich cultural vibrance that's already existed, which is the reason why we want to come there in the first place? And then how do we add to it? We're still going to bring something new, something exciting, something that enhances the community, but it doesn't ignore the rich community context and historical significance that's already been there.
You know, and I don't know if you've probably traveled some, like to Europe.
Just a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the thing that always amazes me. Like when I go to, like my folks from Italy, like I go to some of their villages and they've just figured out how to not tear stuff down almost, right? And it's sort of an American thing that, especially in urban areas, right, where it seems like that was our only solution forever. It was just to like, let's not keep stuff. Let's make it newer, better, faster, cheaper, whatever. And I think you're sort of like the antithesis of that somewhat. You're saying, yeah, we need to be a little slower roll on some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of energy recently, especially in Detroit and southeastern Michigan, about preserving landscapes and historical value and projects. And I don't mean historical from the pure, it's a historically registered building, but communities have historical value, you know, and there are a lot of developers here, folks like Richard Hosey, have kind of made their angle and their focus on how do you preserve the historical value of our downtown and our midtown. And we want to take that same concept. Well, look, there are times when new buildings are required, structures don't fit, right? But even when you put a new structure in, how do you still honor the cultural, historical relevance of the community? And so we want to preserve it where we can. And we're embarking upon some really cool projects that preserve buildings, which we can chat about. But we'll also understand that even when you put something new in, how do you honor the community where you're in? How do you honor what makes the community feel vibrant and uplifted? And then build upon that so that at the end of the day, our goal is so the community says, this is not his building. They say, this is our building, right? And we get that a lot. Oftentimes, community members will walk around and say, so when is our project going to be finished? When we hear that, we know we got to win.
Yeah, because then you got buy-in and it's their they're going to take care of it better. They'll make sure no graffiti or whatever, you know, happens, because, you know, it's the old broken, one broken window, you know, leads to a bunch more broken windows. So if it never happens, people have invested in it.
Exactly.
And you and I both know, I served on SEMCOG's board for a long time, but, and I won't mention any specific cities, but there's a ton of cities in the Metro Detroit, Southeast Michigan that are struggling to create a downtown or to have any of that historic integrity, you know, versus strip malls and, you know, big box stores and things like that.
Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of, that's what makes Detroit development so much different, because we have so much, we have a rich inventory of well-constructed buildings. I mean, you don't even have to think about the big projects. Think about the single family home inventory here in Detroit, right? The building and the architecture in the everyday neighborhood is so rich, right? The more you preserve that, right? It's okay to mix in some new stuff here and there, right? I'm not saying you got to only do the old. However, when you keep it, it gives us a reference point. It's like when you travel abroad, right? When you go to other countries and you can see something that's been there 100 years, it feels different. The town or the city feels different. And when it's juxtaposed with something that's new that complements it, it all makes sense, right? And so it's not an either or solution. It's how do we find the right complement? How do we find the right thing to bring products that kind of fit the communities, add to the communities, right? So you get back to, this is our project, right? How do you find the common hour?
Can I give you a weird analogy?
Go for it.
My friend of mine, the psychology teacher, she said kids are starting to lose the ability to understand recognizing monuments because they use GPS like everywhere, yes. Right? And what you're doing is you're basically leaving the monuments so people aren't just passing through life, rather they're living life, right? Because they're experiencing the path versus necessarily just getting to their end point.
No, that's a great analogy. You know, I think, you know, one of our projects that kind of, even though we weren't able to preserve the building itself, we're doing a project called Sawyer Art Apartments, which is in Detroit West McNichols between Wyoming and Livernois. And the structure just had too many environmental challenges to survive, right? However, when we built the new project, the shape reminds you of a historical building that was there. So while it's something new, it feels similar. But the other thing we did was we actually integrated the building into the neighborhood. So the buildings wrap around the side streets, right? And so what happens is when you do that, you have a choice to make. How does it make it feel integrated? So we changed the roof lines. So the roof lines of that part of the building match the roof lines of the houses it's adjacent to. So from a distance, you really can't even tell the difference between on that side street between our building and the houses, which is exactly the point. How do you integrate it, support it? So people go, oh, I like that. You thought what it tells folks, you thought about me, right? I was important enough for it to be factored into your design. And that's an interesting point. Like oftentimes when we do these development projects, people kind of bristle at community engagement. But what I always like to boil it down to is people just want to be heard, right? Right? They just want to be heard. When people feel like they've heard, and there's many ways to do that. But when it's heard, it's all super supportive. It doesn't mean you got to do everything they ask you to do. But when you hear it, they go, okay, I got it. You listen to me. Therefore, I can support that.
Yeah, it's the first rule you learn as a state rep. Most people don't want to have in-depth conversations. They just want to make sure someone in government's listening to them.
Somebody's listening.
And even though you might not be able to help them always, they at least know they are not, you know, screaming to a blank wall kind of thing. Yeah. And that's good that you do that sort of engagement. And you grew up in the area, right?
Yeah. I'm a native Detroiter, went to Detroit Public Schools, graduated from Renaissance High School. Before I began my kind of winding journey through life, ended up going to Atlanta for college and then spent a couple decades in New York. But ultimately, I knew I had to get back home.
Wait, let's give a shout out to Renaissance. I know you guys are one of the better schools, period, in the state, right?
Yeah, I will forever be a Renaissance Phoenix. So no, it's a great
That's
school.
Right.
We're huge supporters of myself and our family of the public school systems here, you know, because, again, it's about that common hour, right? You know, no city survives if we don't invest and support the educational systems that you're in. And so it's a big, it's important part of our, you know, vibrancy and kind of our creative placekeeping.
You're listening to the Michigan Opportunity, featuring candid conversations with Michigan business leaders on what makes Michigan a leading state to live, work, and play. Listen to more episodes at michiganbusiness.org/podcast.
A lot of people that we talk to that have either sort of boomerang back like yourself a little bit, they usually come back almost like because they've been to like places that we might envy. Mm-hmm. But the reality is you come back and you realize, no, we got a lot of good stuff here too. But it helps you realize how good it is because you've gone out and seen other places.
You're exactly right. So I can, you know, my reference comes from New York, New Jersey, Atlanta. I lived in Korea and Hong Kong and Singapore, right? And I've done all this international travel. So when I tell folks that Detroit and Southeastern Michigan and Michigan as a whole represents probably the most fertile ground of opportunity for growing innovative small businesses there is in the country, I'm very serious, right? Now, I could have continued my career in New York on Wall Street and kind of tried to run the corporate ladder, but the amount of impact that I could have had doesn't compare to what we can have in Michigan. But more importantly, what I didn't understand before I came home, and I'm so glad I found it when I got here, the amount of support we get from the public-private ecosystem here is transformative. Whether it be working with the local municipalities, working with the state level, the amount of support both in pushing of ideas, supporting ideas, as well as any fiscal resource that can be provided, when you add that to the max, it creates a different opportunity that we have here. And honestly, that's why I think, particularly in Detroit, Southeastern Michigan, we have one of the strongest cohorts of small to medium-sized developers that you're going to find anywhere else. Right, which also provides another opportunity for inclusion that you don't get everywhere else in the country. Right, I tell that our Black developer community is as strong here in Detroit as it is anywhere else in the country.
And I would imagine the economies of scales, like in a New York, just for the real estate alone, almost prices people out to even be able to be it's kind of a smaller startup, right?
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. And I imagine Singapore too. If you lived in Singapore, that's even more expensive.
Yeah, that's a whole. Like that, you got to put zeros upon zeros upon zeros.
Sometime we'll have an offline conversation about Singapore, because I do want to know more about it. And just as a side note, do you do ever walking tours, by the way, of neighborhoods or like your projects and things?
We do actually oftentimes. So we get a lot of invitation requests. Actually, we probably do two or three tours at least a year, if not one a quarter. There's always a group that want to understand our perspective. And our perspective is usually pretty unique in that we're oftentimes very early in neighborhoods and communities. And that's the big part of placekeeping. You got to go early, right? Which is a different risk profile than some others are willing to take. But so our project called the OCR Apartments, which is on Grand River, that's, you know, one of the last rays off downtown. We started pushing that with my partner, Georgia Namdi, probably he started purchasing the appraisal ground for a decade ago. I've been on the project about 7 years, right? And since I've got back. And when we first started, it wasn't obvious that you could actually build and activate the commercial corridor of Grand River. Let's fast forward to our announcement to what we're doing today. Individuals already building further beyond us, right? We've already stimulated and attracted a lot more attention, whether it be commercial, retail activity, restaurateurs have come on Grand River. And so when you go in early enough and kind of set the and fertilize the ground, there's some wonderful plants and harvests that are reaped from it. And we try to do that everywhere we go. And it's that ability, I think, to do that. And because we had success doing that, that's why people want to come talk to us and kind of see what we have going on. How do you blend it? How's the community engagement working? How do you build something that seems quite stark or new, but it feels like it fits quite seamlessly in the community? That's how you know you hit the mark.
Well, the only reason I mention it, I just had in 10 people from Singapore as international guests, but they were very interested in how they could apply some of the things we were doing in Detroit here to some of the neighborhoods they are. And I wish I would have known them because I would have given you a call and say, hey, maybe you can help these guys out.
Well, next time you give me a call, we'll be Johnny.
I will. I just wish I would have known about you sooner. But, you know, your reputation came really through the MEDC because I know you've done a few projects now with the MEDC. And why don't you touch on that, then also mention our other friend, Keona Collins, too.
Yeah. So we have, so on the real estate development side, we have two projects under construction currently, which I've mentioned, the OCR departments, and we also have the Sawyer Art Apartments. Those have both been wonderful partnerships with support from the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan. We leverage MADC has been a huge support of ours through the CRP program, which has been instrumental in us kind of building these projects over the finish line. That support is critical, especially when you're going into emerging neighborhoods. You need that type of support and patient capital to make these projects viable. In addition, one of the things that's also what makes part of our ecosystem very unique and very viable for smaller inclusive development is that significant state support you can get, right? Project makes sense, then MEDC is trying to help your project get to the finish line. Not a barrier, but let me help you get there if it makes sense. So you do your part, we can do our part. The other piece of that puzzle which makes Detroit very unique is our CDFI community, right? From the Invest Detroits of the world, which is a big partner of ours, whether it be from the Capital Impacts, the list, those individuals are quite important in our ecosystem. What I think is oftentimes goes understated is, you know, any small business has a challenge getting capital from a traditional bank. If you're a real estate firm, it's even bigger, right? So the CDFIs here locally have stepped in and filled that senior funding gap that lets you know, again, if the project makes sense, you have a fair chance of getting that support and funding. With that type of confidence or certainty in the back of your head, you continue your project along. You take the necessary risk to get a deal done. And that's why folks like Invest Detroit and Keona Cowan in particular have been really important. She's such an advocate community. She's such an advocate for inclusive development that when you have partners and advocates like that pushing, it gives developers, especially of a smaller size, the chance to push through. Now, I don't know if I can continue to call myself a small developer at this point with what we got going on, but we're relatively small in the grand scheme of things, right? And so, but again, when you have partners and champions pushing you, doing that, whether it be at the city level, whether it be the Don Renchers, the Antoine Bryans of the world, the Keonas and the Dave Blaswitz of Detroit, or whether it be the team and Quentin and the team at MEDC, that all kind of makes it work and makes us a very unique place to be in.
Yeah, I don't want to give you a challenge, but she had a lot of downloads for her podcast.
Yeah, I don't know if I can hit her download, but I'm gonna do my best, right?
Okay.
But, and one of the things about like that great partnership with Keona and I, you know, we explore new ways to fill gaps, right? And so one of the biggest things we've come up with recently is, you know, we talked about what's great about our ecosystem, but we're never afraid to say what's missing. And one of the biggest things we realized what was missing was we still need more equity support for Black and Brown developers in Detroit. And so we created a new project called Ebiera, which Ebiera is a fund that puts dollars and capital into the development firms of Black and Brown developers doing projects in Detroit to help ease that capital gap. Figure out what's one of the best ways to remove systemic historical barriers is to provide the capital solutions that folks need. And we're trying to do that as well.
Yeah, the resources are always a big barrier at times. You're going to laugh, but we're close to the end already. And I told you it goes by fast. But if you had a chance to go back and talk to your high school self, now that you've explored the world and you've been around, what would you go back and tell your 17-year-old self or even a high school kid today?
Yeah. Luckily, I have kids, so I do have conversations like this quite often. it probably comes down to two basic things. One is, you know, find your true self as soon as possible. And learn to be who you are. One of the biggest things, my challenges early in my career, is that when I first went to New York and Wall Street, I wasn't sure I could be Rod Hardiman, be a intelligent, articulate, super hyper-competitive Black man on Wall Street. Can I do that and be accepted? And so I spent probably the first year trying to figure out how to do everything but that. And we call it the imposter syndrome. You know, if you're working hard, you have one hand with a mat covering your mask, one hand with a mask on your face, and one hand working, there's no way you're working at your optimal capacity, right? But when you let that mask go and you get to bring your foot up to the table, that's when the magic happens. So the biggest thing is you're valuable, right? You're important, value yourself, and the world will value you as well. And if they don't, go somewhere else. So that's lesson one. Lesson two is, oftentimes we'll focus on the failures of life, where they tripped, right, where they fell down. One thing that we say in our household, we don't take losses. We only have lessons, right? So every opportunity for stumbling, for tripping, for even falling down and having a momentary failure is just an opportunity to have a life learning lesson to prepare yourself further. And, you know, my son's a wonderful budding recording artist. He says, you know, why does stardom have to come, right, with a trip and a fall? Because if you don't have the pain and experience of failure, you never appreciate it nor understand how to take yourself and play yourself to the next level.
There's a quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it for your first statement, is that Confucius says, everybody has two lives. And when you figure out you have two lives, that's when your second one begins.
There you go.
You know, it took you a while maybe to go through New York to figure that out, but at least you figured it out.
Now I'm back on my real life has already begun.
I'm glad to hear it. And the very last question for you is, you got kids. You said, what do you like doing in Detroit or in Michigan? Like, what do you like doing, either activities or places?
Yeah, we love just about everything. So we're big fitness buffs. So whether it be running the parks, you know, whether it be going down to the Riverwalk, whether it be going out to Palmer Park in our own neighborhood, right? There's just so many beautiful places in Michigan to really just not only be in nature and explore nature. That was one of the things I didn't appreciate until I left and came back. Now, going in New York or even New Jersey, there's not just the common population of trees and life that you have on every day in Michigan, which I love, right? So that's a big thing. And then we're just like every other family. We love the movies. We support the local scenes. We're big foodies, right? So if it's a new restaurant, we're going to find it. You know, we try to, you know, thoughtfully spend our money, right? We want to use our money to support the local economy. And so since I love entertainment and food, that's an easy way to do it.
Wow. That's a lot of stuff you guys do. It's good. Glad to hear it. Well, anyway, you've been a wonderful guest, Rod. And you again are Rod Hardiman. He's the CEO and chief strategist of Urge Imprint, as well as the CEO of Urge Development Group. And Rod, you're a lot of fun. I hopefully keep in touch with you. I hope we can do some projects together ourselves.
Let's do it. And when you get those guests from Singapore to come back, let me know.
I'll let you know for sure. All right. Thanks again.
Take care.
Make sure you join us next week, where our guest is going to be Francisco Betti. He is the head of advanced manufacturing and production at the World Economic Forum in Geneva, Switzerland.
The Michigan Opportunity is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion.